Welcome back to the program. Great to have your company this morning. And I tell you what, we've got a whole host of sport coming up this weekend. You'll hear it all on SEN 1116 over various platforms. The season opener is the Melbourne Derby, Saturday, 7:30, Marvel Stadium. If you don't mind whispers, you'll be all over this. I know. Who do you vote for, by the way?
I vote for the Melbourne teams.
Which ones?
Both of them.
Well, Scott Jamieson, the captain of Melbourne City, is on the line. He's very interested to know who you're voting for. Welcome, Scotty.
Morning, boys. Yeah, I am very interested, actually, Ross.
Yeah. Come on, Tim.
Hey, Scotty, I got a foot in each camp. I'm just waiting to see how you start. I'm just waiting to see how you start the season. Come on.
Don't you live next to Kevin Muscat?
I live across.
He's all over you.
I used to live across the road from Muskie. No longer, but I see him around the place. Have you seen him lately?
Well, there you go. No, I haven't seen him lately, but I'm pretty sure Gary's on Melbourne City side, so I'm pretty sure you'll be on there too, so it's all good.
Well, I'm also going to see how the season opener unfolds this Saturday night, Scotty. What can you tell us?
Yeah, well, all I can say is on behalf of our football club, we've travelled through pre-season pretty well. We've made the FFA Cup final, brought in a new manager from France, and you know, it's been a real positive pre-season, so it's ready to go for round one against Melbourne Victory, and hopefully a big blockbuster game to start the season and get the A-League back up and running.
Well, I hear that Eric has turned things around. How different is it under the Frenchman Eric Mombatz?
Yeah, well, it is different. There's no denying that. You know, he's really gone down the path of implementing a similar style to, I guess, for, you know, the novices would call it a Manchester City kind of style. It's just really trying to turn our style in from, you know, playing out from the back and really scoring a lot of goals. So in the past, I've probably been a bit hesitant to try and, you know, tag us as a mini Manchester City, but, you know, we're going to embrace it and really try and work with what we've got. And I'm pretty comfortable and confident that we've done a lot of hard work, but obviously smart work to reap the rewards.
Fifth last year out in the elimination final. Do you set yourself goals at this stage of a season in terms of how far you want to go?
We haven't sat down and set those goals, but you know, within our team and the characters in our team, I'd bet my house on it that every one of them, you know, wants to win titles, and that means being consistent. And you know, with an FFA Cup final, that's a great opportunity. But, you know, the A-League Premiership and the A-League Grand Final, it's definitely the aim.
How seriously do you take the FFA Cup competition?
As serious as you can get. It's a trophy, mate. I've lost a few title deciders in my time, and one being an FFA Cup final against Adelaide while I was playing at Perth Glory. So I know too well the feeling of being on the receiving end of a losing grand final, and the opportunity to win a trophy is one you don't take for granted. So, you know, we'll cross that bridge in 2 or 3 weeks when we play Adelaide, but now it's just about playing the our old foes down the road.
What is that rivalry like? We're speaking with Scott Jamieson, the captain of Melbourne City. They take on Melbourne Victory in the derby to open the A-League season. How real is it? You'll have rivalries with every club throughout the course of the season, but where does this one sit?
No, it is special, mate. There's no denying it. Look, there's also no denying the A-League struggled, you know, over the past, say, year or 2 years, but you always find that when the derby time comes, you know, the code does get excited again. And whether it's the Sydney Derby or the Melbourne Derby, you know, these are special. The fans don't like each other, and that makes it even more special that you do have these fans, you know, going to work on a Monday having bragging rights against their mates. So for us, you know, we don't underestimate it. We know it's a special game, but once we get out there, it's just trying to channel the right feelings and make sure we do the right things. But there's no denying it. We don't like them and they don't like us.
Hey, Scott, there has been, particularly in the last season or so, a lot of negative talk about the A-League. What can you as a player and other players do to turn that around, do you think?
Well, I think just first and foremost, you know, we as players have to really take ownership and, you know, make sure that we're out and about, you know, promoting the game. That's one thing that I'm really making sure our football club's about, getting out to the communities, getting out to the soccer football clubs, schools. It's imperative, you know, we try and build our code again to make it a force. And you know, the product has to be as good. I don't think the product's dropped that much. I just think the code has kind of dropped. So it's about us making sure we put on a good show and then build from there.
Hey, Scotty, good luck. We'll be watching with great interest.
Cheers, boys. Appreciate it.
Scott Jamieson, captain, Melbourne City. Today only 50% off City active memberships and 25% off all other memberships. So now's your time if you're thinking about being a member. MelbourneCityFC.com.au is the place to go.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
I tell you what, one of the sporting stories of last week was the inaugural debut performance of the Melbourne Phoenix up against Melbourne United, and they had a memorable victory. And one of the stars was Mitch Creek. He's been good enough to join us on the line. Go, Mitch.
Yeah, fellas, how you going?
Hey, congratulations. A magnificent start to your career or the history of the basketball club.
Yeah, look, you know, any time you get to run out in brand new colours for an organisation that's just kind of, you know, grown itself a few months before that and kind of started up, to go out there against a powerhouse team like United and you know, luckily get the win is, you know, is a very, very nice feeling in front of 11,000 people is, you know, something I hope we do a lot more often as well.
And Mitch, congratulations, you shut the lights out too.
Yeah, look, you know, you shoot them up and sometimes they go in, sometimes they don't, but... you know, at the end of the day, you just got to shoot them and hope they do go in. But, look, you know, the rest of the boys played an amazing game as well. We played a very unselfish style of basketball. It's really exciting to watch. So we all got to eat at the table last Thursday and hopefully we can do the same thing this Sunday.
And you haven't been together that long. So obviously there's still a lot of improvement in this group as a team and as the connection between the players improves and grows.
Yeah, look, you know, I've been probably a part of the team for probably 3 weeks maybe. You know, it hasn't been much more than that. Some of the guys haven't had as much time with each other as well. We've had a few injuries and guys have been in and out. So we haven't really had a full squad to really go up and down and play 5-on-5 against each other or any practice matches really. So, you know, to see the first game, to see them, you know, to see everyone in the trenches in parts of the games, you know, Melbourne United came on some big runs. They shot the ball very well. They made simple plays. And down the stretch, you know, guys like Chris Goulding and Sean Long made huge plays and momentum killers for us. So to see the guys, you know, handle adversity with such calm and precision, you know, it puts us in good stead come following games. And that's in the game one. So I'm excited to see what happens with a few more weeks of training, a few more games and a few more high-pressure situations because I think from here we can really build into something special.
What about the crowd of 10,500? Must have been great to play in front of.
Yeah, look, you know, Melbourne United have put on an absolute showcase for the last couple of years. You know, they're kind of one of the, you know, the standards now, them and Perth Wildcats. So, you know, to go into what was technically one of their home games and see how they do it consistently on our now-to-be home court at Melbourne Arena, you know, that's a really exciting thing. But at the end of the game, I'm not sure if the 10,500 are going for them or they're going for us or maybe want some hearts. But... you know, the place is pumping. We were excited. You couldn't hear a damn thing out on the court. You're trying to yell at each other to run plays and calls. And our coaches, you know, at the end of the game, we had to miss a free throw. And we went back and forth about 20 times saying make or miss because we couldn't hear each other. So, you know, just things like that is what makes the atmosphere of basketball in Melbourne alive.
We're talking to Mitch Creek. Hey, Mitch, we spoke to you before you went away and played for the Boomers in the World Cup. Just tell us about that experience of playing alongside those other guys in the Boomers team and against some of, obviously, the better players in the world as well. What do you reckon that did for you as a basketball player?
Oh, I guess, first of all, you go out and you play against the very best in the entire world. You've got a bunch of high-level European players that are making millions of dollars. You've got all the stars from the NBA. And you've got the intelligence and IQ of the absolute best minds and coaches all around the world. So, you know, going against that alone and just seeing how they handle themselves, I try and watch everything very closely and try and break it down, you know, post-game, during the game, before the game, and, you know, mannerisms of everything and our team. And then you see, you know, you look around and you try and learn off everyone else, but at the same time, right in front of your eyes, like you said, you've got Patty Mills and Joe Ingles and Matthew Dellavedova, Aaron Baines, Andrew Bogut, you know, absolute stars of Australian basketball and world basketball. So to go out there every day and to see how they carry themselves and the professionalism they hold at an absolute pinnacle of everything they do is a high standard. So to be a part of it, to learn from it, was an absolute blessing for me. I think it's put me in a good position now to come back to the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix and try and deliver some of that some of those insights that I learned onto the rest of the group and hopefully throughout the season.
Paddy Mills, I mean, you would have known a Paddy Mills, obviously, and you would have seen him play. But when you play alongside somebody, does that give you a new appreciation of their talents and what they're capable of doing?
Yeah, look, I've been lucky enough to train alongside Paddy and now to play with him. And, you know, him, for example, is just incredible. You know, people always say, you know, you have to be this, you have to be that, and you're not tall enough, you're not strong enough, whatever the case may be. But, you know, Paddy's not a large guy, but, you know, the size of heart of which he plays with, like the toughness of which he goes about his business with, his ability to shoot the ball, to get open, you know, consistently when every single team is saying, do not let Patrick Mills shoot the damn ball. And he comes off a screen and ping, bang, bang. He's just incredible to watch, mate. So, you know, he's just one of the cases. But, you know, just to be around him, you know, hopefully some of his shooting rubs off on me and carries me over for the rest of the season as well.
Hey, Mitch, we got some numbers, some rating numbers through as well from the first round. And the game that featured LaMelo Ball, I think I'm correct in saying, returned the highest ratings ever for an NBL game. That is, A, fantastic. And B, does it surprise you?
I don't think it surprises me at all. LaMelo has, you know, 4.5 million followers on one social media platform. So the guy's got a following, you know, like a, you know, a fly in a bad smell. So he, you know, he does an amazing job of putting himself in a great position. His family's done a great job of it. The league and the NBL have done a great job of it as well. So, you know, he's gone out and he's showcased his skills. He's 18 years old and he plays with the poise of a 35-year-old veteran and he doesn't look rattled by anything. So guys are now tuning in to watch him and hopefully that now turns into 1.5 million next week and then 2 million the week after. And hopefully we keep building that because then at the end of the day, you know, we want to be, you know, a brand that covers the entire world, not just Australian parts of America for now. But look, he's been phenomenal. It's really good to watch him. Guys like RJ as well had 100 NBA scouts at a training session, which is absolutely absurd. But, you know, to have these things start to happen, I think it's going to be more eyes on the league and it's going to be great for all the players on every other team as well because they get to showcase themselves in front of these eyes.
Hey, Mitch, both those players that you're talking about, young players, they're 18 years of age. They've decided to bypass college basketball and play against men in this competition here in Australia. Do you think that's the best way to go for your basketball development?
Yeah, almost. I didn't go to college. I went straight to the pros as well. You know, I feel like that, for me at the time, was the best decision. I wasn't 100% comfortable with making the choice to go to college. I saw enough guys before me go, get recruited over, be told one thing, and, you know, something else completely different happens. But, you know, I look at it now, and out of the people that I was at the Institute of Sport with, I think two guys or three guys are still playing basketball out of about 15. So that just goes to show that all the guys went to, you know, went to college, you know, didn't necessarily make it. So, you know, I see guys that have the potential to go one and done. I think this is the greatest choice for them. You know, RJ and Melo are going to go and get drafted next year. I think both will be in the top five. If they can keep up what they're doing right now, for 18 years old, mate, and to see how good this league is and them to play solid minutes and, you know, contribute at a high level, you know, says good things about them and also good things about years to come.
Hey, Mitch, great to talk to you again. It was exciting to watch the first game. You got your first home game against the Brisbane Bullets this weekend, which will be massive again. And I think the Phoenix have announced themselves beautifully.
No worries. Thanks, mate. Appreciate the support as always, guys.
Good on you. Mitch Creek there, star for the Melbourne Phoenix. Opened up with a magnificent 28-point, 11-rebound masterclass.
Yeah.
That's the way I saw it in their victory against Melbourne United.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Either today or tomorrow, depending on how much time we've got, I want you to write down the prerequisites for being a breakfast weather guy. Can you do that for me?
I can do that.
Right. Brian Cook is one of the most revered and respected football administrators or sports administrators in this country. And the great news is for Geelong supporters, he's recommitted to the Cats until the end of 2021. He's got out of the pool or he's got out of the ocean. Where have you been, Cookie?
I've been in the ocean. I'm sorry, Gary and Tim. I'm running a bit late for this interview. Anyway, I apologise.
No, we're just blessed to have you. I was telling Tim you're the great Rottnest swimmer. How many times have you done that?
Solo 14 times, but I've finished 12 times. So, it takes up a little bit of my life during the summer, but it's well worthwhile. It keeps me fit for a long time.
And what about other swimming events that you've entered into?
The smaller ones, you know, the 2Ks and 3Ks around the place. Yeah, no, we do a few of those each year, but my aim each year has been to swim the Rottnest Channel at the end of February, and that's a 20-kilometre swim. I do that solo, so it keeps you pretty handy, I reckon.
You got an English channel in you or not?
Say that again, sorry?
Have you got an English channel in you or not?
No, I'm getting a bit old for that, mate. I think that's nearly double what I do. It's around about 32 Ks, the English channel, and the temperature of the water's average around 14 to 15, which is pretty low, even though the temperature now in the water is 12. You know, it's freezing down here at Torquay. But, you know, we get out there, there's a dozen of us who get out each morning and we don't wear wetsuits. And we think it gives a bit of a buzz.
Hardcore.
You know, it's good. Yeah, hardcore.
Hardcore stuff, Cookie. We love it. Hey, 14, 24, 37 and a first round next year. Are you happy? Not happy to lose Tim Kelly,
not happy to lose Tim, no. But happy with the draft, yeah. I think in terms of the trade picks we got, it's pretty exciting, isn't it? It gives us the opportunity to do a lot of things, whether we want to pick up kids, whether we want to bundle up a couple and get pick in the top 10, and so on and so forth. So we've got a few opportunities now, and that was the reason why Stephen Wells and our team went early. And we think it's a win-win-win for us, for Eagles, and also for Tim, of course, who's back with his family. So the good thing about the early parts of this trade is everyone wins. We don't know who's going to win in the long term, but let's not worry about that at this point in time.
So when you sat down and you thought about, okay, we're going to lose Tim Kelly, which you knew pretty much that you were going to lose Tim Kelly, and you looked at maybe Jack Stephen. Jack Stephen has already said that he would like to go to Geelong. And we heard Wellesley talking yesterday, and he was talking pretty tough about how far the two clubs are apart at the moment. Is that just posturing at this stage, Cookie?
Not really. Now, Wellesley is pretty straight.
Yeah.
Doesn't play a lot of games. His history tells you that. And so the reality is we are very, you know, enthusiastic about Jack Stephens coming, but I don't think there is a willingness to, you know, to go and give a really high pick for him. We just think that this is a bit unique, this trade. We understand St Kilda have reasons for letting go Stephens, and we're very happy to pick those up, but we're not willing to provide a high draft pick for that swap.
Do you think you've got a backup plan then? If I would have thought in your thinking, Kelly out, maybe Stephen in for a couple of years. If the Stephen one doesn't eventuate, is there somebody out there now that you could possibly identify and get into the ranks that is a mature age type player that can fill that role?
Not really. There's a couple around who are 30, 31, 32, and not overly favourable on that one, on those. So it's more about our existing players like, you know, Narkle and Cockatoo and Constable and a few others coming through. And you've got to be wary, don't you, that if you do pick up a couple of older midfielders, you actually limit the opportunities for people like Fogarty and the people I meant, the young players I mentioned. And it's a balancing act, really. I've always gone into these periods trying to get young talent because we're always after a 1 year and 5 year balance. You know, we want to do really well next year, but we also want to do well in 5 years' time. And, you know, I've heard it around the traps and in the media, you know, that the Kelly deal may not be good enough because there's no high draft picks that doesn't give us the opportunity to top up, to allow players like Dangerfield and Selwood and Taylor to win a premiership. Well, we do want to win a premiership, but we're just as concerned about winning a premiership in 5 years' time and not bottoming out. And we haven't bottomed out in the history of our footy clubs that I'm aware. And I know that in the last 20 years that I've been here, we've always had a philosophy of trying to finish top four, not to bottom out or go through the middle of the AFL and get some better draft picks. Our best draft pick since I've been at the club 20 years has been number 10. Yeah. So when you think of it that way, we've done okay. And it's not necessarily going out and topping up. It's more the opposite.
Well, you're the envy of the competition in lots of ways, and you've got a list that's still going to be hyper-competitive. You've got 30-pluses in Selwood, Hawkins, Ablett and Taylor, and then turning 32, Henderson, Zach Smith, Dangerfield. So that age profile suggests that you may need one or two younger fellas to come through?
Maybe. There's nothing wrong with getting bulking up on young players. We've got a hell of a lot of number of young players right now, by the way. Between the ages of 23, if you look at our numbers, it's about 20. We've got a few at the top end. We haven't got too many in the middle. So that's where our gap tends to be. It's not so much at the top end.
Mm. And so this is the other interesting thing from a Geelong point of view, Cookie, is that you remain so competitive through the home and away series and the finals form. And I know Chris prickles at this, but the finals form then perhaps doesn't play itself out in the same manner. And we spoke to you this time last year, and you were really honest about the fact that relationships needed to be better developed. How do you see it at the end of this year?
No, there's a pretty high engagement levels at our footy club, and that's not simply self-perception. It's also metrics that we carry out around our engagement levels, player engagement levels between each other, between themselves and coaches, between themselves and the medical team, et cetera, et cetera, is the highest it's ever been. And so there's only some minor tweaking we think that probably needs to occur. Things like, appointing an assistant coach who works in development, and we've done that just recently. Little things like that. So it's more about tweaking now than it is about anything else.
Talking to Brian Cook, the CEO of Geelong. Cookie, you're one of the elder statesmen in the competition in terms of the executives across the competition. Did you fully support what the AFL did in terms of the priority pick that they gave the Gold Coast Suns?
Yeah, no, I do. Personally, I do. And I think our club would as well. I know Colin Carter, our president, does. Yeah, we think there's a bundle of things that are required to ensure Gold Coast is successful. Them, GWS, we just need to make sure that this is truly a national competition. It's going to take a long period of time. It's going to take a lot of money. But in the interest of the industry and our game and throughout Australia, I think we need to just make sure these sides are successful.
Do you think they've got the right people in place there now, the Suns, for them to be successful?
I'm not answering that one, mate. I don't like commenting on the capability of other administrators and other leaders. I just leave that one alone, I think, Gary.
But that's vitally important, though, isn't it? To make sure you've got the right people there to ensure success.
Yeah, it is. It is, and the bundle of things that occurs is, it can't simply be around players. It has to be around assistance to get good leaders at all levels, both wide and deep, across the club, in all sorts of departments, but also going down and through the layers. And so I think there needs to be an overseeing role by the AFL in helping attract good leaders into those clubs, even if it means paying them a little bit more or providing some sort of lifestyle they haven't got. But I think the whole bundle of things that's required, not just players.
Hey, Cookie, who's the next captain of the Geelong Footy Club?
Oh, goodness me. Good question. I think the favourites would be Blissavs or Stewart. I think they would be the player favourites right now as well, and maybe Dangerfield. But I think Selwood's probably got another year or so left in him, and Danger's got a couple as well. So outside those, I think probably Tommy Stewart and Blissard would be a couple of possibilities.
No one's a bigger fan of Joel's than I. Is there a case to be made to make that change now or sooner rather than later so that the successor can have the benefit of the great leader, guiding them through the transition?
Yeah, no, it's something you could debate. We haven't done that yet, and we haven't seen a need to do it. I suppose because we have so much faith in Joel Selwood and the way he does lead the group, but no, we haven't done that yet. We may, but it's a good idea to actually talk about it.
And Cookie, in the wash up of the Tim Kelly, is there anything your club could have done in any way to have held him to the club?
Oh goodness, I think we tried everything. Yeah, we tried absolutely everything, and I don't think we could have done more. I won't go through all the measures we did implement, but I don't think we could have done any more. One of the things that, if I can just mention one thing that we tried to do, we tried to get assistance outside the camp for the family. Because unfortunately, the Kellys have got two children who are autistic, need unbelievable support and assistance. And we tried to, work around the AFL in terms of we get some compensation. And we eventually couldn't get that. The AFL wouldn't allow us that, which I felt was, I just felt it wasn't in the interest of the game or him or anyone really. Anyway, that was the only thing that I felt we could have done better was to have got some more dollars to do more things to help them in so many more ways, but we just couldn't get to that stage.
Cookie, we're almost done for time, but just a quick one on the AFLW. I mean, are you watching that with interest, these negotiations that are going on at the moment, given you've got a team coming into the competition?
Yeah, probably more from the outside looking in, to be honest with you, mate, because we're not part of the negotiation.
He's just gone underwater.
I think that we just need to get this over the line pretty quickly. I don't like where it is at the moment. I would hope that there's a compromise on all parties. Look, I think the issues around the number of guns.
We were quiet long enough for Cookie to come back.
More games. Sorry, mate.
Oh, no, it's all right. The phone just dropping in and out. That was all.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. More games, more money, but more transparency. And it seems to me that last point, the more transparency issue, is the key one at the moment, which I find quite intriguing. So I think they will agree to a 10-game season, then 11, then a 12-game season over the next 3 years. I think there'll be something like a 20% increase in pay. And we just have to try and evolve the game more and more and more. The whole diversity and inclusion issue in AFL is a huge one. It's been the biggest change in AFL, in my opinion, over the last 20 years. And it's going to take a little bit of time to make sure we get this right. And remember, our club's 160 years old, and it's basically been a male fiefdom for a long, long time. Mm. We have two life members who are female and 170 who are male. So, we've got to get over these things as well. Yep. But I think it's an integral part of our industry now, and we just have to make sure we do it properly, but maybe a little bit slower than what's going on.
Hey, Cookie, great to talk to you as always. Enjoy a break after the trade period's done.
Yeah, thanks very much, guys. See you then.
Great. Brian Cook, love talking to him, the CEO of the Geelong Footy Club, Freo Fresco Blinds Co. Quality that blocks out the rest. Scotty Palmer votes coming up on the other side of this.